when Culpa talked tonight with home plate umpire Ron Culpa. Not too happy are Jays fans with the umpiring, especially in the latter innings. The ninth being a big moment there. Some four strike calls, to say the least, from the home plate umpire tonight. But it's not as if the Blue Jays did themselves many favors. Some wild pitches, pass balls, a throwing error coming back to bite the Blue Jays. But they do load the bases in the top of the ninth inning with two outs, but are unable to bring home the tying runs as Breivik Valera strikes out looking to end it. So the Blue Jays dropping the opener of this three-game set at the Trop. It is Jays Talk brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you. As always, you can get us on the text line, 590-590. Give us your name and your location. Josh, I know umpiring, definitely one of your most favorite things to talk about. We won't spend a ton of time on it, but I'm willing to give you the floor here for a good 30 seconds, maybe a minute, if you want to go off on the umpiring for a bit here.
Okay, so you know me. I sometimes can be maybe over dramatic a tad or emotional, whatever it is. And recency bias is often a hell of a drug, but I cannot think of a worse home plate performance by an umpire that I, in recent memory, off the top of my head, that was as pathetic of a showing as I could ever think of. I know it's a hard job. I know it's not an easy job. I'm not saying I could do it, but you're there. You gotta be consistent. You gotta call balls and strikes at a better clip accurately than Culpa was doing tonight. You know, he was all over the place low. He was all over the place outside. There was just no consistency whatsoever. And once batters have to adjust for your horrific car wreck of a strike zone, you've totally lost the plot. And Breivik Valera should have swung. 3-2 pitch. No question about it. You cannot look at strike three with the bases loaded and two outs. It's just not something that can happen. But I'm not as up in arms about it as I ordinarily would be, because he's kind of protecting, because how are you supposed to know if that's going to be called a ball or a strike? Because the zone in spots like that has been all over the place. Robbie Ray got victimized by it a little bit. The Rays got victimized. It wasn't just the Blue Jays kind of getting the short end of the stick. The Rays kind of were victimized at points as well. It just can't happen. It can't happen on April the 1st, and it sure as hell shouldn't be happening in the throes of a playoff race or in the playoffs. Just feed me the umpires. We're already basically prisoners to our robot overlords anyways, with the way our society is with technology and stuff. What's another thing when it comes to technology? Bring me the robots, figure it out. I can't continue to see stuff like this alter the course of important Major League Baseball games.
All right, well, I said I was only going to give you 30 seconds to a minute. You went over your allotted time.
Sorry, but, you ding me there.
I will let it slide this time, but it's exactly what you said. It's the consistency, and just from watching the game tonight, it felt as if, you know, early on, Ron Culpa was calling pitches a certain way, and then at some point, halfway through that game, things changed, and at that point, he felt, well, I've just called that a strike, so now I got to keep calling these strikes the rest of the way. So, you know, players had to adjust mid-game, and, you know, you've got guys coming up third time in the order, fourth time in the order, and they're thinking, okay, earlier in the game, this is what the strike zone was, so this is what I'm going by, and all of a sudden it's changed, and now what am I supposed to do? And you saw Teoscar Hernandez there in the top of the ninth, you know, obviously gets a bad strike call in the bottom of the zone, and then there's one on the outside of the zone. He's thinking, well, I mean, I probably got to swing at this anyways just to protect and see what happens here. But, you know, the umpires aside, as we said, the Blue Jays did some things tonight that did not go in their way and help them out at all. There was a pass ball by Alejandro Kirk. There was a wild pitch from Nate Pearson. There was a throwing error by Jake Lamb. And, you know, for most teams, you know, these things maybe don't come back to bite you as much. But when you're facing the Tampa Bay Rays, for whatever reason, Josh, it just feels like they always find a way to take advantage of it. And they did once again tonight as the Trop, which maybe this year hasn't been as much of a house of horrors. The Blue Jays after tonight are, you know, 3-4 down in Tampa Bay this season, but they are just relentless, whether it's an at-bat, whether it's on the bases, out in the field. This is why the Tampa Bay Rays have, you know, won 93 games so far this season.
Well, and you talk about the Trop. I saw a good Twitter follow, James and T.O., tweeted that Jays haven't scored more than 8 runs at Tropicana Field since August of 2010, which is just, like, honestly hard to believe. But actually, I guess it really isn't hard to believe if you watch Blue Jays baseball year in and year out in games at Tropicana Field. They, generally speaking, have a really difficult time scoring runs. But, you know, in the lead up to last week's series, I was basically saying, and really anytime you see the Rays on the schedule, their entire modus operandi, the way that they operate, regardless of who they're playing, is they prey on your weaknesses. If you're sloppy in any regard, the Rays basically are built to take advantage of you. They prey on your weaknesses. They're a predator on your weaknesses. And the Blue Jays had too many tonight. You know, Robbie Ray was not tremendous. I didn't think he was awful by any means. He just wasn't getting the same level of swing and miss on borderline pitches that he usually gets. And the Rays were patient. They made him work. But, you know, balls in the dirt, free base runners, errors, you know, Jake Lamb not eating that baseball on a, that's a Hail Mary play, considering what we saw a little bit earlier in terms of Kiermaier beating that one out. Like, if you give the Rays an inch, generally speaking, they take a mile, and that's exactly what happened tonight. And that's why they have success in the playoffs. They're always greater than the sum of their parts, but they execute. They generally speaking, are really strong in the fundamental areas of the game. And it may be boring, but they can beat you a lot of different ways. Sometimes they can power up and hit a ton of homers. They can play, you know, boring old small ball. They can pitch. Their bullpen is good. They run the bases well. It's like a death by a thousand paper cuts sometimes playing against the Rays. And this one certainly fell into that category tonight.
Yeah, and there's definitely, you know, luck involved. You got to be good to be lucky, lucky to be good. You know, I think of Kevin Kiermaier's at bats tonight, where if he chops that to maybe Bo Bichette or Marcus Semien, maybe to the left side of the infield, he's beating it out anyways because he's so fast. But just how happened that both of his choppers were both to Jake Lamb, and the first one he's able to beat out, and of course the second one is the throwing error that leads to the run coming home to score. But it just feels like those types of things happen for the Rays all the time. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier, a guy who's not a particularly good hitter, here he is chopping balls to the left side of the infield, beating them out, causing chaos on the bases. Now, he did toot blame himself there, getting thrown out at home on his attempt for the Little League homer, and maybe that was the, you know, third base coach's fault for sending him on a play where he was clearly going to be out by a mile. But things just seemingly going the Rays' way tonight, and feels like it goes their way a lot when they take on the Blue Jays, especially down at Tropicana Field. But lots of things to talk about from this ball game. Like I said, as always, you can text us 590-590, give us your name and your location. We'll get to those coming up in just a few minutes. But let's begin with Robbie Ray's start tonight. And of course, everyone hoping to watch Robbie Ray shove coming into this one, because Gerrit Cole yesterday, of course, had a rocky start against Cleveland, opening the door, you would think, for Robbie Ray's candidacy to win the AL Cy Young. I still think even after tonight, he is in the driver's seat. The numbers still looking better in, you know, for him than they do for Gerrit Cole at this point. But, you know, coming off his last start against the Rays, where he was phenomenal at Rogers Center, it's always an interesting situation when you've got a pitcher taking on the same team in back-to-back starts. And tonight they definitely, you know, were grinding him quite a bit. Only went 4 2/3, gave up 7 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, gave up a 3-run homer to Yandy Diaz. Have not seen the multi-run homers too often from Robbie Ray so far this season. But, you know, I don't think I'm taking too much away from this one. It just felt like a case where he obviously was getting squeezed at times. And, you know, Manuel Margot felt responsible for about two of those lengthy at-bats, where I think it was like 10-plus pitches in both of them. But this Rays lineup, they are pesky. You know, maybe some of the names don't jump off the page, whether it's a Taylor Walls or a Manuel Margot or a Jordan Luplo. But, you know, they did a great job tonight against Robbie Ray, just making him work and just hanging around long enough for a Yandy Diaz 3-run homer.
Robbie Ray only got 15 swinging strikes on 61 swings, which is 25%, which is far lower than what he normally does. And the Rays fouled off 32 pitches against Robbie Ray tonight. They were spoiling a ton of pitches, like I was talking about a little bit earlier. You know, a lot of those borderline sliders where the depth and the movement is similar to the fastball, that's why he has so much success. They just were kind of spitting on those when usually hitters are swinging over the top of that and left wondering how he was able to have so much success with it. But I didn't think he was terrible by any means. I was a little bit, and I'm not sure you noticed this as well. I thought his velo was a little bit down tonight, not concerningly. Like Carlos Rodon's last fastball of the night tonight was 89. It was nothing like that. But he was down like a mile or so. There were some 92s and 93s. He can still live on that. But I wonder if, you know, maybe he was just not quite all there energy-wise, if he just, his arm wasn't feeling quite as good, or maybe it was deliberate and he took a little bit off to try and keep the Rays further off balance because they just saw him. And maybe it's also partly that. It is difficult sometimes, to, especially against a quality lineup like you're talking about, to have success back-to-back outings. Like, there's a lot of video available in general, but there's something maybe to be said for, you know, just the Rays had a better plan tonight, and Robbie Ray was just a little bit or more, I guess, not as sharp as he was last time out, and it's as simple as that, and that's why they were able to have more success.
Yeah, that very well could be the case. It'll be interesting to see if Robbie Ray does address it tonight as far as the velo. I did notice that it was down just a little tad. He touched 95, almost 96 in this ball game. Was averaging around 93 with the fastball, which, like you said, is a little bit lower than his seasonal velocity, but didn't seem to be battling too much. Obviously, you know, the trainer did not come out and look at him. Didn't seem to be much of an issue. Could have just been a case. You know, it's late in the season, and he had some long innings in this one. So, you know, maybe it's just a little bit tiring when you're trying to battle through some of these innings where, you know, he did have runners on base. There were some stressful innings for Robbie Ray in this one tonight, even though he only got tagged with that three-run homer. But it felt like the Rays constantly had runners on base against Robbie Ray this evening. I wanted to get to the bullpen, of course, and tonight we saw a parade of Julian Merriweather, Taylor Cicedo, Nate Pearson, and Ryan Borucki come out. None of the, you know, A guys that I think we always talk about, whether it's Adam Simber, Trevor Richards, Tim Mayza, Jordan Romano, you know, those guys, of course, tend to come in when the Blue Jays have the lead or it's a little bit tighter. Now, midway through this game, the Blue Jays were only down a run, but for Saucedo, Pearson, and Borucki to all come in and give up a run, that's a tough look because you're hoping that these are the B guys. Let's put them that way. I don't know if that's really, you know, denigrating them, but, you know, they aren't the circle of trust guys that I just mentioned with the Richards, the Simbers, the Mayza, and Romanos. These are the guys that are going to pitch on the days where those guys, you know, can't go. You can't have guys coming in, and when you're only down a run, giving up those insurance runs to the opposition. You know, Julian Merriweather gets the one out, of course, in his inning of work. Taylor Cicedo, you know, gives up the run. Jake Lamb with the throwing error that obviously didn't help. Nate Pearson with a wild pitch didn't help his cause. And then Ryan Borucki gives up a left-on-left homer to Joey Wendell, which I guess if you want to look at it one way, I mean, Wendell, he's got a 591 OPS coming into the game against lefties. Just, you know, one of those things. It was a hanging changeup, and he's able to, you know, get it into the first row in right field. But, you know, I think Charlie Montoyo's looking for guys outside of those four pitchers that I keep mentioning. You know, so one of these guys, can they step up and be a consistent pitcher on the days where I can't use those guys? And right now, with Julian Merriweather, Nate Pearson, and Ryan Borucki, I don't know which one of those guys I feel the most confident in. Maybe Nate Pearson, who seemingly has flashed the most out of those three, but is it a little bit concerning to you that, you know, that group of pitchers right now, I guess if you want to lump Taylor Cicedo in there as well, Joaquin Soria, who's currently away from the team, none of these five have really, you know, jumped off the page as, you know, one guy that I think I'm willing to put in that next tier of reliable relievers.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely concerning. There's no question about it. And, like, you know, on one hand, I get where people are coming from. You know, it's a one-run game. But you can't just continually use the same four relief pitchers. You know, it's the fifth inning. You're going to add Trevor Richards in the fifth inning down a run, and then you're pitching him down a run. I know you can't hypothetically say, oh, well, we might need Richards tomorrow. We might not. You got to manage what's in front of you. But, like, I'm not really going to get too up in arms about not going to your highest leverage guys. This isn't a do or die game. If it's the playoffs, okay. This is an important game to win. But, like, if you can't rely on anything beyond four guys in the bullpen, you're probably not going anywhere realistically in the playoffs anyways. I think you need a five-man pen at the very least to have consistent success in the postseason especially depth-wise, if you're going into it in the fourth inning in certain situations in a winner-take-all. And the Blue Jays don't have that right now. And I don't know who is my most trusted. It's probably still Soria, but that's not really saying all that much because he's had a couple of notable blowups. Julian Merriweather just doesn't look like the same guy. I don't know if it's the spin rate. I don't know if it's the lengthy layoff. You know, we're not seeing as much life on the fastball. Slider doesn't seem to have as much bite. And Nate Pearson, I know Joe on TV was breaking down, maybe he was tipping his pitches with his movement. I thought that was very interesting. I was largely impressed by him tonight. But the reason the Blue Jays lost this game is not about, you know, the bullpen deployment. They played a horribly sloppy baseball game, and the Rays took advantage of it. And a lot of the runs that were scored by the bullpen were as a result of some errors or some careless play or an inability to block a ball or a wild pitch by Pearson, and less you know, about the bullpen usage or anything like that, at least for me.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair for sure. You can pin it on a bunch of different things outside of the actual pitching that the Blue Jays had in the ballgame tonight. Once again, you can get us on the text line, 590-590. Give us your name and your location. We'll get to those coming up in just a moment. Blue Jays fall 6-4 to the Rays, dropping the series opener at the Trop. It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Kohlberg with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg. Rays beat the Jays 6-4 in game one of three at Tropicana Field. The Blue Jays load the bases with two outs in the top of the ninth inning, trailing 6-4, but Breivik Valera strikes out looking to end it. Did have a 3-0 count. A couple questionable borderline strike calls potentially by Ron Culpa behind the dish, who had a pretty awful strike zone all night long. But then Valera takes strike three, looking on a fastball on the outside of the plate. The Blue Jays with three homers in this one tonight. Teoscar Hernandez, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and Marcus Semien, who hits his 41st of the season. His incredible season continues, but tonight in a losing cause. As always, you can reach us on the text line, 590-590. Give us your name and your location. Let's get to some texts right now. Josh, what are you seeing?
So obviously a fair bit of umpire slander, and hey, I'm for it tonight. You heard me off the top. I was like a toy that you wind up. I couldn't stop once I got started there. Kevin from Markham, I caught the last half of the game and have one question. Was the strike zone that big all game? Why are we rewarding catchers like Francisco Mejia and Gary Sanchez, who frame everything and look like little leaguers, when they bring an obvious ball back into the zone? I would say that the zone was consistently pretty terrible, at least for the second half of the game. And it wasn't great early on either. It was just like you said, it kind of flipped. Balls were strikes early, and then strikes were balls. It was all over the place.
Yeah, it was a mess. And, you know, I always think this when I see a performance like that by Ron Culpa or any other umpire. Like, when they go home at the end of the night, do they go look it up and see what their strike zone was, or they don't even really care about it? The umpires obviously, you know, get graded on it to a certain extent, but you know, we see those umpire scorecards that show up on Twitter that are always interesting. But I always wonder, like, does Ron Culpa like go back to his hotel tonight and think, man, that Teoscar Hernandez strike call was really, really bad? Or does he go, you know, hey, this is a tough job. Like, what do you want me to do? I'm doing my best out there.
I wonder, actually. Like, you know, Cowboy Joe West, I believe, is going to be behind the plate tomorrow, which is going to be a bleep show, I would imagine, on the surface. Maybe he'll surprise us and it'll be a great zone. But maybe it will be advantageous for Alec Manoah with some of the late run that he gets on his fastball. Maybe he's a threat to strike out double digits, even though some of them might not actually be strikes. Mike and Vaughn, Jake Lamb's throw was extremely irresponsible. Just make sure the ball gets to your teammate and don't risk your team the game. Like, I would just more, like, it's always easy for us to say, that's the caveat, but that seems like an eating it type of situation. Like, he had to barehand that ball anyways, and how good of a grip do you have in that situation? And Kiermaier's hauling ass down the line. And the upside is maybe he beats it out, but the downside is in a bang-bang situation like that, ball ends up the first baseline. And, you know, Kiermaier should have been at third, but he obviously boneheaded decision, tries to go home. But that seems like more of just cut your losses. Don't try and play a hero situation there and risk anything.
Yeah, I think that was a tough play for me. Like you said, the bare hand was nice, but you would expect, you know, you realize you don't have a great grip on the ball. It's already two outs. So, you know, is the risk worth the reward? And I could understand maybe if it was, you know, a young 22-year-old, you know, guy coming up and trying to make an impression and trying to get you out of that inning. But, you know, Jake Lamb's a vet. I think he needs to know a little bit better in that spot to, you know, probably not make that throw. It was going to be a challenge there. But, you know, I've seen some people on the text line saying they're not fans of Jake Lamb. I know at the plate tonight, he wasn't particularly great, had two strikeouts in his three at bats. Now is a 692 OPS for the season. But I think, you know, he, Corey Dickerson, and even Breivik Valera to a certain extent, you know, since those guys have, you know, come up and they've had an impact, right? All three of those guys have done some pretty solid things and solidified those positions. I know, you know, Santiago Espinal is on his rehab assignment, just started it a couple of days ago. Kevin Biggio has been scuffling down in AAA. I think, you know, Espinal definitely more of an option at this point to come up and actually, you know, get some playing time when he's ready. But if third base is really the only position right now that you kind of have any bugaboo about, you're fine with the catching, you're solid at first, second, short, center field, left field, right field. I mean, third base, if you've got just one position where you're not feeling great about, that's a hallmark of a pretty darn good team, I would say.
Well, and I think Sho and I talked about this a little while ago, and the fact that third base, which is usually such a premium position, really both ways, but especially offensively, you don't necessarily look at third base being a black hole offensively as the hallmark of a great lineup and a great team. But the fact of the matter is the Blue Jays are just so solid everywhere else in terms of, you know, power production, ability to make contact, what have you, that makes a good offensive player, that third base basically being a pit of despair offensively this year, for the most part, hasn't really mattered. And you can kind of just imagine if they can find a way to add an impactful third baseman. I feel like I bring up Jose Ramirez once a show somehow. It's just like, and this is like, it honestly happens organically. I don't even feel like it's a square peg into a round hole. But yeah, it's honestly a testament to the rest of the roster that the situation with third base hasn't become more of a problem.
Yeah, it really is surprising. That is for sure. I'm with you on the J-Ram train. I don't think I talk about it as much as you, but I just keep envisioning in my head. So I'm trying to make it happen out there in the ether, and hopefully we can see that next season. But as far as tonight goes, the Blue Jays with just 5 hits on the evening, and 3 of those were home runs. Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. giving the Blue Jays the early 2-0 lead. Marcus Semien with the 2-run homer there in the top of the 9th inning. But, you know, Gurriel Jr. just continues to be a beast so far the last couple of months, especially this month. Same with Teoscar. He's had a great September so far. And I keep, you know, looking at Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and watching what he's doing and wondering, you know, as great as Alejandro Kirk has been at times over the last, you know, month and a bit since coming back to the Blue Jays, I'm not sure there's a hotter hitter on this team than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. seemingly. I know Teoscar's been great, Vladdy as well, but, you know, it sounds crazy to just say, like, maybe he should get a bump up in the order, but, you know, when he's riding hot, that's someone that I definitely want to keep having up in big ABs. Drew a big walk tonight as well in the top of the 9th inning, which I thought was impressive. Like, this guy has just been an absolute tear. And batting him 7th feels like, I don't want to say it's like not the perfect spot for him, and maybe he should be getting more ABs, but I don't even really know where you slot him. Like, you're not batting him 5th over Teoscar. You're not moving him to the cleanup spot, but 7th and having a guy who's that red hot right now just feels weird. I think that's the best way I can put it.
I'd bat him 6. Kirk is kind of scuffling a little bit, and I understand why you might want to have Kirk ahead, but, you know, Lourdes deserves to bat as high as possible, and he's not batting any higher than 6 because 1 through 5 is just a murderer's row. But, like, this is Lourdes at his best, and I think this is why both you and I are very, very high and have long been very, very high on Lourdes Gurriel. I said he's going to finish win the American League batting title. He is top 20 in the league in batting average. Yeah. So
if the season was 2 months longer, I would like the chances.
Yeah, I'd like my chances. So, like, this is the thing with him is, can he be more consistent? And I feel like the short answer is probably no. because, you know, just like his profile is such where he's a free swinger, and sometimes he's just going to be locked in and making a ton of contact while also just his pitch recognition is going to be good and it's going to lead to a few more walks. But I don't know if that's like a foundational thing other than just he happens to be really locked in. And I think he could have 3 months a year where he's really, really good. You just have to find a way that the other 3 months of the year are not just like in the Grand Canyon wandering in the wilderness. He just has to be a little bit better in those down months. And you know you're going to get the really good months. And if the down months are league average, then you're talking about a player who could put up, you know, like a 130 or a 140 WRC plus.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal run that he's been on. And you look at the, you know, full season numbers, like I said, 802, the OPS up to now after the solo homer this evening, the walk as well. And, you know, for his career, he's a guy that's like over an 800 OPS, which is pretty remarkable considering how bad he was at the beginning of this season. The Blue Jays fall to the Rays 6-4 in game one of this three-game set. Robbie Ray, the starting pitcher tonight, he went 4 2/3, giving up 3 earned runs on 7 hits. Maybe we'll hear a little bit of Robbie Ray coming up as Jays Talk continues, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Rob Wong, Josh Goldberg with you here on Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Blue Jays dropping the opener of their three-game set against the Rays 6-4 tonight at Tropicana Field. Robbie Ray got the start in this one. Definitely ran into some tough luck with the umpiring, but the Rays did a great job battling him all night. Went just 4 2/3 in this one, serving up a 3-run homer to Yandy Diaz. Let's hear from the Blue Jays starter. Here is Robbie Ray.
Hey, Robbie, working through those early innings there, even when you were getting some zeros up, a lot of those Rays batters working deep at bats. What kind of challenge do hitters like this present to a pitcher?
Yeah, they're a good hitting team. They made me battle. I had to be on the whole night. They, you know, worked some deep counts, laid off some really good pitches. Yeah, I mean, it was just a battle kind of the whole night. I felt like, you know, the one pitch I made my pitch, fastball in off the plate, and the guy sucked his hands in, hits a homer. There's nothing you can really do about it.
And when you are facing a lineup like this, every at-bat being a battle, how do you balance just sticking with your stuff and trying to slam that in on them or making an adjustment to them?
You know, I think there's a balance. I think there are some things that I'm just going to do because it's my strength, and there's some things, you know, I felt like we worked the ball away a little bit more today with the fastball. Had a little more success with that. So there was a little bit of a balance between sticking with what works and also, you know, having to make some adjustments.
So there is Robbie Ray, who gave credit to the Rays tonight for battling him all evening long. Maybe the next time we see Robbie Ray facing off against the Rays, it will be in the ALDS. But maybe we're getting a little too ahead of ourselves right now. Still a lot of baseball left to play, as the Blue Jays and Rays will continue their series tomorrow evening. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links and Hunger Down to the Minors and Feed Your Wild Side. The Blue Jays, Rays, back at it tomorrow for game two of this set. Alek Manoah, Drew Rasmussen will be the scheduled starters in this one. First pitch just after 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Wagner will have the call. For Andrew Holland, Ben Wagner, Josh Goldberg, I'm Rob Wong. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.